Shrink Wrap Radio Number 22, January 22nd, 2006. Dreams About Snakes with Suzanne Maiden. Welcome back to Shrink Wrap Radio, the planet's premier psychology podcast. This is your host, Dr. Dave, coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area, long recognized as a hotspot of psychological innovation. Our show revolves around interesting personalities in and around the world of psychology. Shrink Wrap Radio is the show that speaks from the psychologist in me to the psychologist within you, whether you be amateur, student, or professional. If you are at all interested in dreams and what they mean, I think you're going to find today's topic fairly fascinating. We're going to be talking about snake dreams. Do you ever have dreams in which snakes appear? I know I certainly have. The snake is a fairly common dream symbol, but what does the symbol mean? If you're a regular listener to this show, you've heard me mention another podcast called Insight Works, which is spelled InsightWorks. It's a show that I listen to regularly, and I feel a lot of kinship with it, inasmuch as it deals with the psychology of Carl Jung. The hosts of that podcast are Robin and Suzanne Maiden, and Suzanne is just finishing up a master's degree in depth psychology at Pacifica Graduate Institute here in Northern California. And in one of their recent episodes, they responded to a listener who was upset by the symbol they use as their show's logo, which happens to be a fairly well-known symbol in Jungian psychology. It's a circular symbol depicting a snake swallowing its own tail. Their listener was concerned that by using the symbol of a snake, it somehow suggested a connotation of evil. In fact, however, the Ouroboros, which is how that symbol is known, is a worldwide symbol. I was so taken with Robin and Suzanne's discussion of snakes in general and the Ouroboros in particular that I've taken the liberty of editing down that portion of their show so that I could replay it here, with their permission, of course. So let's start off by listening to that excerpt.
It makes me think also of the symbolism of the Ouroboros. And yes, it is the serpent in a circle consuming its tail. However, in Chinese culture, it's the dragon. So one thing I would like to say is that this symbol is found around the world. It's in Chinese culture, Buddhist culture, Aztec culture, Native American culture.
The Ouroboros itself or the symbol of the snake?
No, the Ouroboros itself. And Jung said that the Ouroboros is actually an archetype.
Well, I guess we need to explain a little bit about what an archetype is.
Yes. So do you want to do that?
I think a great description of the archetype, again, you have to look at the world through the eyes of depth psychology, and that is the world of consciousness. That's our concrete material world that we exist in every day.
Mm-hmm.
That's the world of the ego. Then as you move to the deeper realms of ourselves and past the veil, we move into our unconscious.
Yes.
And then beyond that, there's the collective unconscious. That's that world where these forces, these archetypal forces, exist, and we can't see them, but yet we can see the representations or we can see the effects of the archetype. So it's kind of like the wind. We can't see the wind, but we can see the sail fill up with the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And then even in the conscious world, then we can see when the sailboat moves.
It's the archetype now of the Ouroboros and the energy of that. And what does it mean, Robin? Why have so many cultures used this symbol for thousands of years? Again, this symbol predates Christ.
Well, it is the archetype of rebirth. The snake sheds its skin.
Ah, yes.
And it's that life force It's not evil or death or anything else. It's the snake's own life force that makes it shed its skin and is basically reborn.
Yes, it's the power of life, isn't it?
Right. It's the power of life where it will be reborn.
Mm.
So consuming its tail, it's that circular fashion of mm-hmm. life.
It's transformation, isn't it?
Right. Life and death, the circle of life, moving and always moving.
Yes, and never stagnant. And what I like about what C.G. Jung said about the Ouroboros is that it represents consciousness and unconscious material being integrated to what he called then the transcendent function. And to me, that has very personal meaning. As many of you have looked at our website, 5 years ago, I was diagnosed with a very rare cancer. I had a 9-centimeter sarcoma attached to the base of my spine. Now, what does all of this have to do with this current discussion about the Ouroboros? Well, when I was very sick and in my treatment phase, I kept having repetitive dreams of various types about snakes. Now, I don't like snakes. I actually really kind of abhor them. I don't want to be around them. I don't have any interest in handling them. But yet I had all of these snake dreams, and I found them very disturbing. And then Robin suggested that I go into depth therapy with Barry Williams, who is world-renowned for his work on dreams. And I naturally met that with some resistance and didn't want to invest time in that. And now I think, thank goodness that I went down that path. But what I learned was that all of these serpent dreams that I was having represented healing. And in fact, I have healed from this very deadly cancer, and I've continued being in remission. So for me, it's a very profound symbolism that has brought me the gift of healing.
Ouroboros is really a powerful symbol for our family and what has happened in this in our family.
Yes, yes. And for me, it is the gift of spiritual transcendence and enlightenment. And it's taking something very painful for me, albeit my cancer, the physical and emotional pain that accompanies any catastrophic illness, and transcending that and turning it into something very positive, i.e. helping others.
Well, great transition, because I have a quote here.
Great.
From C.G. Jung and his book, Man and His Symbols. The symbol of the snake is commonly linked with transcendence because it was traditionally a creature of the underworld and thus was a mediator between one way of life and another.
Mm, very nice.
So let's talk a little bit about the symbolism of a snake. We've talked about the Ouroboros specifically.
Yes.
But the snake in particular exists right at the interface between
the two worlds.
The two worlds, this world and the underworld. So it's got its belly right up to...
Yeah, but when you say underworld, do you mean anything evil? Or when somebody says underworld, I think of darkness and Satanism and all kinds of really...
And hell and evil.
Yeah,
and
abhorrent
bad
and, abhorrent things to me.
Well, let's look at it symbolically again. And
okay.
That's depth psychology, symbolism, and really the underworld could represent the unconscious. That's that immaterial world where we can't move to easily, and we certainly don't go there easily or come from there easily. But yet the snake does, and that's why it's a powerful animal symbolically, because
yes.
It does. It
mediates between the two worlds, and it brings up this primordial energy from the depths up above that into this here and now realm.
Which I equate to consciousness, and the snake will mediate down and go into the world, the underworld, which is the unconscious, and yet it'll come back and it lives right at that interface between the two worlds. That's why it's a powerful animal to me, and yet I think through all of history, I think it's been perceived in the same way, in that symbolic fashion of how it mediates between those two worlds. It's sort of the messenger, quote, from The Practice of Dream Healing by Edward Tick. So here's the quote. The snake is the god's perfect symbol for travel between the underworld and the world of light and for achieving a balance of their powers in one being.
Wow.
So that, I think, if you just have that one sentence that explains why we have the Ouroboros as our symbol on our website.
Very profound. But I would like to say that when that listener sent us the email saying, why do you have a symbol of evil as your logo? To us, the Ouroboros has a beautiful spiritual symbol of wholeness and integration of consciousness and unconsciousness, which C.G. Jung termed the transcendent function. And it's what we all are striving towards, its wholeness, spiritual wholeness, psychological wholeness, and physical wholeness. So for us, it is a symbol of rebirth, regeneration, and transcendence. It does not have an evil connotation for us. The biblical understanding of the snake in today has a negative connotation. But let me just say that the serpent tempted Eve, and without that, Adam and Eve would have never become conscious. They would have never gained knowledge.
The snake actually can be perceived in two ways there. The serpent in the Bible.
As the hero or the villain.
Right. It yanked Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden. Paradise. It was wonderful. So in a negative fashion, the snake yanked them out of paradise.
So how does one perceive that? Is that perceived as a good thing or a bad thing? And I guess we can conclude different things. I want to conclude that it actually was positive.
And allowed Adam and Eve to have consciousness, to receive consciousness, and to be aware of themselves.
Yes.
Robin and Suzanne, now what a great intro to Jungian ideas about snakes, about the Ouroboros, and about Hermes. The symbolism of Hermes is closely related to that of the snake, because Hermes travels between two worlds, just as the snake does. Now, later on in their show, Suzanne does relate a dream that she had in which Hermes plays an important role. I took the liberty of transcribing that dream and recording an audio comment for them to play on their show if they wanted to, of me kind of projecting myself into the dream and more or less giving my own interpretation of it. So I thought I would share that with you here now. Suzanne, you shared a very powerful dream, and I'd like to take the liberty to share with you and your listeners some of my own associations to that dream. Just so it's fresh in everyone's mind, I'll replay it now.
I haven't had a lot of time to process my material. So here is my dream in brief. It's only several sentences long. I am dreaming that I am newly widowed. I am a woman in my 60s. My husband has just died. I am acutely grieving. And while I'm sleeping in my dream, my deceased husband comes to me and says, "If you want to heal, you must understand Hermes." End of dream.
Wow.
Wow, indeed. What a dream. Jung distinguishes between big dreams and little dreams. In my experience, the dreamer is the one who can tell whether it is a big dream or a little dream. If this were my dream, it would definitely be a big one in terms of its import and its impact. Suzanne, I can't begin to know all that this dream means for you, but I will try to put myself in your shoes and use the "if this were my dream" approach, which leaves you free to accept or reject whatever I say. Clearly, these are my own projections, but maybe some part of them will resonate with you. I'm imagining myself to be you, to be a woman who has had a brush with cancer, embarking on a new career, with a husband whose own career may be facing significant challenges. The part of the dream that stands out most to me is the voice that says, "If you want to heal, you must understand Hermes." Most dreams have a sense of things having been spoken, of some kind of dialogue, but without the sense of a specific quote. Jung instructs us that when we get a direct quote, such as occurs in your dream, it's the higher self speaking, or what he calls the big self. In my dream, I'm a widow. My husband has died. So right away, I take this dream to be about change, the death of one thing and perhaps the birth of something else. The fact that it is my husband who has died, I take on several levels. On one level, my husband is facing a significant career challenge, which could have an economic impact on our lives. I will need the gift of Hermes, the ability to accept change, to move through this transition. However, the image of my husband may simultaneously refer to an inner masculine aspect of my own nature that is shifting. Some masculine aspect within me may be dying or may be in need of dying, of change. At yet another level, some part of me may be worrying about the actual death of my husband, about how I could possibly make it on my own. And again, another higher part of me is telling me that I need to understand and accept the inevitability of change that Hermes represents. Hermes is a healer. I am moving into a healing profession. I need to draw upon the power, the wisdom that Hermes symbolizes in order to be effective as a healer. If this were my dream, I would ask myself, what is it that I need to let go of, and what is it that I need to nurture if the healing power of Hermes is to move through me? As the messenger god, Hermes is also the ultimate communicator, bridging worlds. If this were my dream, I would think of my desire to communicate and to heal via my podcast. I would take it as a message that I need to take full courage to speak my deepest truths in order to sustain my own healing process and to ignite it in others through the power of the spoken word. Because I have experienced healing from cancer and Hermes and snakes come to me in my dreams, I realize that they have a totemic significance and power in my life, which I must learn to court and to embrace. Well, Suzanne, these are my projections on your dream. I don't know whether any of these reflections will resonate for you. Because we're all connected at some deep level, though, I think there is a good chance they might. Suzanne, I hope we'll get to hear some of your own reflections on this dream at some later time. Well, speaking of getting Suzanne's reaction to my interpretation of her dream, why don't we go ahead and do that right now and get it, and speak to her live, so to speak. Now, she lives in Atlanta, and so I'm Skyping into her, and I can tell you right now that there's a knob I think I didn't twiddle the right way. Dr. Dave is still learning this technology, and so it's a little soft on her end and a little loud on my end, and I apologize for that. But let's hear what Suzanne has to say at this point. Hi, Suzanne. Welcome to Shrink Wrap Radio.
Thank you, David. I'm so glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you here because I sure enjoy listening to your show. And we've just finished listening to part of your show on snakes and the Ouroboros. And then we listened to your Hermes dream and my projections about the possible meaning of the dream.
Right.
And I know it's been some time since you had that dream and since you did your show and then listened to my response, but I'm hoping we can get back into it.
Okay.
Were there any places in my reaction to your dream, to your Hermes dream, that clicked for you?
Yes, David, there were. And first I would like to say I thought you were very, very brilliant in your response and that you were very sensitive to the fact that it could possibly be your projections. And I thought, wow, that's very sensitive. However, in spite of that comment, I also recognized there were parts of what you said that did really resonate with me.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, I think what resonated with me is that when you said something about the male figure who came to me, and that was my deceased husband in the dream, that maybe that was my anima. And I thought, yes.
Your animus, the male aspect.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes, my anima,
mm-hmm.
Yes. Thank you. Yes, and I thought, yes, I did not see that figure that appeared in my dream as my husband, my husband in this time-space dimension, but yes, as part of my anima. So, where shall we begin?
Well, just, I'm wondering, as you think about it as your animus, and in the dream, you're a widow in the dream, so something has died, something has passed away, something is changing.
Yes.
Where do you see that happening in your life?
Well, You know, I'm not completely sure yet, but I do have some ideas, and I'm wondering if there's a part of me that has already died because of cancer,
mm-hmm.
and that the other part of me now is ready to unfold, and it's a maturation process. So part of the animus has almost had to die and be sacrificed in order for the new Suzanne to emerge.
And yeah, particularly I'm wondering, are you aware of some attitudes that had to go, that had to die in order for this new Suzanne, this new set of attitudes to emerge?
Oh, yeah, that's an excellent question, David. And where I do recognize that attitude is part of my animus energy was for me to be the taskmaster, list maker, how shall I say it? I guess the role in my primary family that I had
mm-hmm.
was that of rescuer.
Yeah.
And who think of as a rescuer, but as that's a very male, archetypally male image that we have, right? It's the hero.
Right, right. So there was some kind of heroic aspect in yourself that needs to dim down so that...
Yes, dim down. That's very tender and diplomatic. yes, that is exactly what it was, because I felt as if, and I think many listeners may identify with this, is that I played a role of doing a lot of caretaking and rescuing.
Right.
And that's what I feel part of the impetus for my own cancer was.
And of course... That's typical of many of us who go into the helping field, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're very adept at doing that.
Definitely.
Yeah, so for me, I was unaware to the extent that I am now. Prior to me having cancer, I wasn't aware of how kind of integrated I was and how adept and just seemingly unconscious I was at playing that role. And then when I got cancer, I was diagnosed with a very deadly cancer, a sarcoma, and it was 9 centimeters attached to the bottom of my spine, to my right hip, and my front stomach muscle, and the prognosis was very, very poor.
Let me jump in here, because I'm struck that it was attached to your spine, and of course we're talking about snakes and dreams, and the spine, you know, is often symbolized by the snake, as in Kundalini energy that they talk about in India.
Yes, yes, beautiful, yes.
So I'm just wondering if there might be some kind of tie in there.
Well, I know that I had shared with you before that I had so many dreams while I was in the very deepest part of my cancer treatment. I had all of these dreams that were showing me serpents and snakes, and I don't like snakes in my waking life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. I don't like reptilian things. That's not my gig. I don't want to handle them or house them or have them as pets. I don't like them. And here they were just bombarding my dream life.
Why do you think that was? What do you think is going on there that these snakes kept cropping up during that period?
What I have tried to figure out and what I think they symbolized for me was the archetype of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And as we look back and even see, like in the Aesculapian times, and he was a healer and he would do dream work with people, but he had all of these snakes outside as kind of a symbolism. And if we fast forward through time, now we can see that in the modern-day caduceus.
Right, right.
The medical symbol.
Yeah, the medical symbol that has the two snakes curling around a rod.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And isn't that analogous to the double helix, to our DNA?
Right, right.
So, yeah, it's fascinating.
It is. Now, in your dream, you heard a voice. And can you replay for us what the voice said?
Yes, so the dream is very brief, of course, and I'm a 60-year-old woman, and I'm grieving over my dead husband, and my dead husband appears to me in my dream and said, if you want to heal, you must understand Hermes.
Now, yeah, and that statement, as I said when I responded to your dream, when we hear a voice in a dream, it's something to pay particular attention to.
Yes, you were so succinct when you said that this is like a big dream.
Right, right.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's a very big dream.
So what do you take that message to be, that if you wish to be a healer, you need to understand Hermes?
Wow, I thought a lot about this and about the role that Hermes played. And, of course, he was a messenger between the gods, but primarily Zeus. And Zeus being the head god or the chief god, so Hermes would mediate between those two worlds, between Zeus and then the mortal world.
Mm-hmm.
And Zeus would send him as the messenger to go tell mortals. And what the message typically was, Hermes was supposed to communicate with the mortal, this message is for you to fulfill your destiny. And so when I read that, I thought, oh my gosh, that's me. I'm supposed to fulfill my destiny in encouraging others and to help them unveil, decloak, peel away
yes.
what their destiny is.
Yes.
Yeah. So
And for you to, the way I'm hearing that is that for you to fulfill that destiny, that you need to be adept at moving between two worlds.
Yes, exactly.
Maybe, what would those two worlds be for you? How would you characterize that?
Gosh, David, that's a really good question. I guess, in my opinion, I guess that would be going between the Jungian world and what I know and understand, and that's very humble, my humble understanding of depth psychology, and going between that world and that of my clients.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Somehow integrating the two so that when I have my client sitting before me, that I'm not just seeing the immediate, but asking how is their symptom serving the soul?
Yeah, and Hermes shuttles between the mortals, as you said, between the mortals and the gods.
Yes,
and you're shuttling between mundane is the wrong word, but the emotional problems of this life.
Yes. And sometimes it is mundane.
Yeah.
And shuttling
between this mundane world and also the world of spirit, and trying to bridge those two and to bring your client into some connection with their own higher self or the world of spirit.
Right, but there's part of me, David, that I want to run away from that responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It feels cold.
Just like Jonah. Like,
yes,
Jonah.
Exactly. I'm thinking I want to go hide.
Right, right.
Right, because it feels like such an awesome responsibility and burden, somewhat of a burden, but also a privilege. But it really curls my toes. I mean, it scares me.
Sure. Yeah, it's awesome. And there, I think not only of Jonah, the biblical stuff comes to mind for me, Jonah, and also Saul, who became Paul, who was called, to go out and preach. And it was like, no, not me. I can't do that.
Right. And also when Moses was tasked, he said, God, why me? I can't speak. I stutter. I'm a stutterer.
Right.
Why can't do this?
Right.
And I feel, I feel some of that. Like, oh, no, not me.
But what these stories tell us is that is a common human reaction to the call of higher destiny. But also what the stories tell us is you can't get away from it. I'm afraid you're stuck, Suzanne. You're going to have to rise to the occasion.
I don't want to rise to the occasion. Yes, actually, Dr. Dave, in all seriousness, I agree. I do believe that's what the dream says, is that you must fulfill your destiny as Sudan.
Right.
You must understand your role as a type of an archetypal image of Hermes.
Right.
And going, you know, going between, bridging the two worlds. And can I take a deep breath now?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Right. Well, you know, we don't have a lot of time today because I've already played a long segment from your earlier show, which people may want to go and hear the whole thing at www.insightworks, which is spelled InsightWorks.com. And I definitely want to have you back on the show because I know you're just finishing up a master's thesis that has to do with self-injurious behavior, cutting in particular. That would be a great topic for a future show.
Great.
So,
thank you so much, Dr. Day, for having me on. It's really a privilege to be on your show, and I certainly have listened to many of your podcasts and really enjoy your work, and you're very articulate and very well-spoken, and that's why I keep listening to you.
Okay. Well, likewise, and I'll keep listening to your show as well, and say hi to Robin.
Thank you so much.
I hope you enjoyed today's exploration of snake dreams. I should hasten to mention that one should never assume that the meaning of a given dream symbol will be the same for everyone. That's even the case with an archetypal symbol such as the snake. For example, in my earlier life, I used to have lots of dreams in which I somehow found myself surrounded by lots of writhing snakes crawling all over each other. Really creepy. And I would be terrified in these dreams, feeling trapped. I had the strong feeling that if I tried to get away, if I tried to run or tried to jump over the snakes, I would be bitten. As I reflect back on these dreams today, I would take them to mean that I was stuck somehow in my life, frozen, afraid to move, afraid to speak out or assert myself. In another recurring sort of dream off and on in my life has been that of confronting some terribly clogged toilet, brimming over with disgusting feces. Now this image strikes me as a variant on the snake pit dreams, once again speaking to me of blocked energy. Now, lest you get too negative an image of Dr. Dave's psyche based on clogged toilet dreams, let me quickly share a fragment from a more recent snake dream. I dreamt of a large snake with a beautiful, colorful diamond pattern on its body. It had a large, flat, diamond-shaped head, like the back of a lady's lacquered hand mirror, and the underside, in fact, was a mirror. This is a very powerful image that I'm still sitting with. Where my earlier snake dream spoke to me of stuckness, this one has a mysterious spiritual feeling to it. Perhaps it is calling me to look more deeply within. I could go on and on, but we're already running long, and we don't want to delve too deeply into my psyche now, do we? The point is that for many people, dreams about snakes may indeed be about healing or transition, and for others, they may have an entirely different meaning. Dreams speak to us clearly enough, but in a language of metaphor. What is your dream saying to you metaphorically about the actual circumstances of your life? This is great. I have to share with you that while putting together this show on snakes in dreams, I received a poem via email from Larry Robinson, who was our guest on the topic of psychology and politics. And the title of the poem that he sent is The Snakes of September. How fitting that that should arrive just as I'm working on a show about Jungian psychology and snakes. This sort of meaningful coincidence is what Jung calls synchronicity. It always feels like such a treat when these synchronicities happen. It's a reminder that at some level, everything and everybody is connected. We received email feedback from several listeners, which is always a big thrill. Because today's show is running a bit long, though, I won't read them. I did receive one from my friends Charlie and Hella. With a growing number of listeners around the globe, I find the most challenging thing is still getting friends and family to listen. Go figure. So it was great to hear from Charlie and Hella. Hella gave me two good taglines, which I might use in the future. The first is, "The shrink who makes you think." I like that. Her other one was, "It's all in your pod." Maybe I'll throw that in at the end of the show sometime as well. I want to acknowledge several emails from newly minted PhD in Australia who has recently earned her doctorate in forensic psychology. I'm hoping to have her on as a guest in the future. I was also very happy to receive a warm and friendly email from Iraq in response to the show on Islamic psychology with Dr. Doug Davis. Muhammad writes from Baghdad, and I'll just quote a brief portion of his email. He says, "These days we face a lot of difficulties in our lives over here, but fortunately life hasn't stopped. We don't get everything we want, but at least we're moving in the right direction. I've been lucky enough to meet and sometimes work with some very kind Americans, among which were some peace activists opposing the war. All I've seen from them is love and support for me and for all my people." Well, Muhammad, that's great to hear, and please accept my sincere wishes for your continued safety and friendship and for peace in that region. It's not too soon for me to announce a couple of upcoming workshops that I'll be leading. I'll be leading a weekend workshop in May at a retreat center just outside of Dublin, Ireland. The workshop will be on the hero's journey, and it will have experiential components that will get you very involved in Joseph Campbell's model and applying it to your life. Then in September, I'll be co-leading a week-long workshop in Tuscany, Italy, with Dr. Ron Alexander, who will be a future guest on this show. That workshop will involve a mix of intensive Gestalt therapy, group work, and meditation training, among other things. There will also be sightseeing and recreational time. So contact me if you would like additional information about either of these. Well, once again, I love hearing from listeners. You can contact me at shrink@shrinkwrapradio.com. Our show notes are at www.shrinkwrapradio.com, and we have links there to various things relating to the show. You can leave voicemail for Shrink Pod at Skype or Gizmo Project. And now we also have a phone in the U.S. where you can leave voicemail. And that phone number is 206-888-2746. Stay tuned for the PodSafe music selection at the end of the show. If you listen closely to the words, you'll see that they tie into our topic about dreaming. So that's it for now. This is Dr. Dave saying, it's all in your mind.
Richard Pryor, running on fire down the Sunset Strip, and as the flames burned brighter, my head grew lighter, and I watched the flesh fall from my fingertips. Ashes to ashes, trust to dust. I don't know what it means to be burned by something that you love so much. I think I must be living the dream. I think that I'm living the dream. Oh, I dream. I want. My ears rang the cry. to my knees.